Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have another great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm! Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comment. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events. Greetings and salutations, everyone. It's good to be with you once again. Today, we cover a potpourri of topics, ranging from presidential politics to the Olympic Games and everything in between. We reflect on President Obama's speech at the National Urban League, Mitt Romney's visit overseas, the Chick-fil-A controversy, new developments in HIV, Sherman Hensley's death, and much, much more. The phone lines are open. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. I also want to encourage you to comment during the show, either in our chat room or via Facebook. But before we get started, I'd like to bring on the star of the show and my co-host. Joining me live in the studio is the executive producer of Current Events and the chief operating officer of TaylorMade Training and Consulting. I introduce to some and present to others no other than Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, last week, President Obama delivered a historic speech at the National Urban League in New Orleans. The president issued an executive order establishing the White House Initiative on Educational Excellence for African Americans, saying, "A higher education in the 21st century cannot be luxury. It is vital necessity that every American should be able to afford," he said. Now, take a listen.
I'm establishing the first ever White House Initiative on Educational Excellence for African Americans so that every child has greater access to a complete and competitive education from the time they're born all through the time they get a career.
Now, he added that his administration is pushing all colleges and universities to cut their costs. Now, another major topic by the president during the National Urban League convention was gun control. He affirmed his belief in America's right to own guns, but he singled out assault rifles as better suited for the battlefield. "I believe the Second Amendment guarantees an individual the right to bear arms," Obama said. But I also believe that a lot of gun owners would agree that AK-47s belong in the hands of soldiers, not in the streets of the cities. He called for stepped-up background checks for people who want to purchase guns and said he would also seek a national consensus on combating violence. Najima, we talked about both of these issues last week. In particular, we discussed the need for President Obama to come out and speak to an African-American issue and the need to discuss gun control in this nation. Now, I'm glad to see that someone from the Obama administration is listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I want to talk about both of these issues. But first, let's take education. What do you think the significance of this executive order, more importantly, how important is it for the president to finally single out African Americans as a constituency?
Oh, I think it was very important, and I'm grateful and thankful that he made the announcement during his speech at the National Urban League. I mean, he received so much flack for not going to the NAACP's convention a couple weeks ago, although he's been there before. I just couldn't understand what that was all about, but I was glad that he made not only that he went to the National Urban League, but that he made such a significant announcement during that speech. And I think it's also important that, you know, we recognize that as the executive order, that this is the beginning steps, you know, and as he goes into his second term, we can see more of these sorts of things happening that are going to be targeted. Yes, everyone will say it was about time. Some will say he's just pandering to his base. You can call it whatever you want to call it, but I'm pleased with his decision. So now the next step is hopefully there'll be some sort of commission formed, some sort of task force or whatever the new buzzword is, that will include people from all levels, that are in government, outside of government, that are in education, from every level, whether that's high school, superintendents, college professors, educators, people that studied education, that might not be a professor or a teacher, but understand outcomes. So hopefully that will be a cross reference of people, you know, not all black people, but a cross-reference of people that have the heart to want to make sure that this isn't just an executive paper, excuse me, but that they give him what he needs to push it forward.
It's interesting that you said that some would say he was pandering to his base. So I want to follow up on that a little bit. How convenient was it then for the president to omit marriage equality, immigration, and this education initiative during the first 3 years of his presidency, and now address it, seeming that we're, you know, less than 100 days, approaching 100 days out? Why now, as opposed to then?
Well, it's like I said probably a couple of weeks ago, when you first get in somewhere in a position, obviously, even as president, you have to see, you know, who's really on your team and who's not. And let's not kid ourselves. Those whom we thought was on the president's team were not, because had they been, then it would not have taken so long for the Affordable Health Care Act to pass. So let's be real clear about that. Although they may have ran and said they were Democrats, they wasn't the same kind of Democrats. And so he had to figure out who was really on his team and who wasn't. What could he get done with this group of people, and what he couldn't get done? So I think that's what it was about. He did. He put all of his political stake in the Affordable Health Care Act, and I'm grateful for that. He lost some points with that, according to some. But as that law takes into full effect, and we see the outcomes of it, all the people now that are not liking it will begin to like it because they'll begin to see some of the benefits. So when you talk about what he's doing now, 3 years into the game, he knows whose team, you know, he knows who's on his team. So he knows where he can make some statements, make some bold predictions now that he wouldn't have made in his first 100. His first 100 days, if you recall, we was about to fall off a cliff due to the banks. So he didn't have time to pander quote unquote, to the, whether it was the black community, the gay and lesbian community, or the Latino community. He had to save everybody. And so his focus was on keeping us from falling off of that cliff, which is why we had the first stimulus and why he did what he did with the auto bailout. And then came, you know, health care. So all three of those things cross-reference all groups, whether you black, white, green, or purple, gay, straight, don't know what you are, you can benefit from those, from all three of those things. And then as time went on in his presidency, he began to step out a little bit. And neither one of those was safe. Neither one of those was safe. He took flack when he said his little information about immigration. And if you think about it, all of that has been done in this year of 2012. It's not like he did something for somebody one year and another year. All of that primarily has been done within the last year. And so he's doing exactly what he's supposed to do for a man that's running for re-election. I'm going to let every constituent know that I am the best person for them for the next 4 years to keep their lives comfortable and to keep things growing in their favor.
Well, can we assume, using that analogy or strategy, I should say, that he will take a more aggressive approach towards domestic issues that affect those three groups in his second term? If he's stepping out on the limb, and I'll put those in air quotes, now, it could hurt him or for re-election, or it may help him for re-election. We won't know until November, the mid-November, right? So if he is elected, can we assume that he will then take a more aggressive approach towards these three constituents?
Well, I wouldn't just limit it to these three constituents. I'm going to say he's going to take a more aggressive approach with Congress if nothing changes. If the Democrats don't take over the House and things stay as they are in terms of the people in Congress, he's going to have to take a more aggressive approach because he don't get anything done working with that group with that group of people. He already knows that. So I guarantee you that he's already planning on scenario A and scenario B. Scenario A, all things stay the same. They maintain a majority in the House. Here's what I'm going to do. All things different. You know, the Democrats get back control of the House and the Senate. Here's what I'm going to do. But he also knows that in doing that, he knows that there are still going to be those Democrats who are not Democrats like him. So he's going to still be pushing for things that some in his own party are not ready to push for. But he's looking at 10 years down the line. So when you're looking at 10 years down the line, what's going to be the impact? When we did the affordable health care, you know, some of the things when we thought about 2014, we thought that was so far away. But shoot, we're 2 years away from that now.
Right.
You know, yeah. And in 2008, 2009, we was like, oh, my gosh, 2014, wow, that's so far away, and here we are, right? We're knocking at the door. We come around the corner. So he's not just thinking about how, you know, what things can I do to help you today, although he's thinking about that. But he's also thinking, how can I help you long term? That's why education is important, because that is the one thing nobody can ever take away from you. Once you get it, that's yours. You have the power to do something with it bigger than what anybody else can try to hold you down to. So, yeah, you can say he'll probably get a lot more aggressive, I think, in his second term, because that's what they all do. You go back in history, Bush did it, Clinton did it, Reagan did it. They all got more aggressive in their second terms than what they were in their first terms.
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. What do you think about the people's comments they made against the president always chastising African-American audiences? He's done it several times when he's kind of pointed the finger, if you will, and told them that they need to do a better job at getting an education, turn the TV off, and things of that nature, in a more of a forceful father-type manner as opposed to a more political official presidential manner. What do you make of people's comments when they say that?
They need to take their feelings off their sleeves And as Reverend Al always says, when you throw a rock into a pack of dogs, you know who you hit because the one that barked. So all these people that all of a sudden want to be offended by what he said, well, your child probably wants sitting at home with the TV on all day. And so, or not following through on their homework. You probably the parent that's not going to the parent-teacher conferences that really don't know what's happening in your child's school. So there's a lot of reasons for that. And he even stated in his remarks that night that that wasn't in his prepared comments. That was, you know, he just threw that in there. So it wasn't like he set out to offend or, but had he not said it, had he just acted as if, and we want this president to be one of us, but then we don't want him to be one of us. By that I mean we want him to understand our plight, but then we don't want him to tell us about our plight. So he knows the data. He's a very smart man. The data is out there for anybody who wants to read it in terms of dropout rates for African Americans, for lower test scores for African Americans, and you have lower test scores because you're not studying. You're not studying because you're probably watching TV, or you don't have the right environment that's conducive to you studying. So there's a lot of reasons why, but the ones that you have control over, then take control over. So you can't control that right now you're living in Section 8 and people be coming in and out all the time. That's outside your door. But on the inside of your door, you can control whether or not your child is playing video games all day. And if you can't make a parent-teacher conference, you can make a phone call. You can send a note to the school. I mean, you know, there's so many the things that you can't control, then find yourself controlling them instead of being offended when the president, Cosby, and anybody else stands up and says what we know is true. It's just like when we're dealing with the violence in these other cities, and I know you're going to touch on this, we want somebody to come in and do what we have the ability to do for ourselves. We know Pookie just shot up them 10 people because he's around the corner talking about it. But we're not calling the police on Pookie because that's my best friend's son and he just got out. So we don't want him to go back in. So why should somebody else come in and take care of a situation that you can take care of yourself? So just like the president saying, turn the TV off, he's right. Turn the TV off. Turn the games off. Go right. I mean, I ran a summer program this summer, and it's amazing how kids aren't learning the basics in phonics, how to conjugate a verb. They don't even know what conjunctions are. And you want to get up here and be upset with the president? No. So he was well within his place to say it. And if he hadn't said something, then we would have been like, oh, he's just talking to us like everything is okay. We would have had something to say about that.
You know, Michael Eric Dyson took some flack the other day by posing the same question that I did. And, of course, Twitter blew up, Facebook. I'm sure his email blew up. And he responded the other day. And I want you to take a listen to his response. And I want you to get you to weigh in. Take a listen to what Dyson said about people poking at him for asking that same question.
Welcome back. Last night when I was discussing President Obama's speech before the National Urban League with Karen Finney, particularly as we addressed some gentle criticism of the president by black observers, the black Twitterverse, the Blitterverse, went straight bananas. Folk were calling me a hater for just broaching the subject at all. Mind you, it wasn't even my viewpoint, but the very act of me asking a commentator a legitimate question seemed to send some of the president's other supporters into an irrational frenzy. Because, yep, I'm one of his biggest boosters. Make no mistake, I'm riding hard on the Obama bandwagon. I've been on that journey a lot longer than the black Willie-come-latelys who voted overwhelmingly against Obama when he ran for Congress, and who initially spurned him when he asked for their votes for the presidency because they were beholden to Hillary and Bill Clinton. Back then, most black folk were stumped that I was supporting a relatively unknown junior senator they referred to as Barack Obama. So please don't lecture me about the right way to show my loyalty and love to a man I've known and supported for 20 years. Now, don't get me wrong. Don't get it twisted. I understand the hypersensitivity that black folk display when it comes to Obama. There is real hate out there, unprincipled right-wing politicians who call him every horrible name besides a child of God, rude journalists who interrupt his press conferences with belligerent retorts, hateful wannabes who try to trump his legitimate citizenship, and presidential campaigns that try to portray him as the ultimate other. That's hate. But what is not hate is an honest difference of opinion that is framed in respectful fashion. The president not only doesn't have a problem with that, he encourages it. How do I know? Because I've been in his presence too many times when he's invited that criticism. He is humble enough to understand that sometimes constructive criticism can lead to deeper insight and better policy. And trust me when I tell you, he can give as good as he gets. A couple of years ago, when he and I were in the Oval Office talking, he told me point blank, after listening to me expound on an issue, that he had to pass legislation with opponents who didn't listen to Michael Eric Dyson. I ain't mad. I understand his belief and respect his position. And if someone respectfully disagrees with him, he ain't mad either. Hear me, black folk. Save your exasperation and your indignation for the president's real haters. I ain't one of them. How do I know? Because he told me so at the Olympic warm-up game the other day in D.C. when he hugged me and thanked me for my love and support. When you get at that level, holler back at me.
So obviously, he felt the Blitterverse, as he called it, reach out and touch him on his issue of asking that same question that I just posed to you about President Obama and the way he talks to African-Americans is at some point. What do you think about his response to that question?
Oh, I think he was right on point, because if you know Michael Eric Dyson, you know that he is a huge supporter of the president, huge. And so to question his commitment to the president or to question his critique of the president, I found it to be a little off. And I was watching that night when he posed the question to Karen Finney, and he made the statement that he was responding to some people on Twitter. So it was never as though it was his original statement. He was asking the question. I mean, we're in modern technology, right? And you know, right there at the moment, he's responding to what some people had sent him some tweets about. So I think he was right to kind of clear the air and set the record straight and remind people, you know, use some Johnny Come Latelys on supporting the president. And some of them ain't came yet. Let's just be truthful about that. And so he had to make that statement. And I applaud him for doing it. When you have a platform and you can get the word out, get the word out. I bet won't nobody else come to him like that.
You know, he mentioned something that I don't want to just kind of gloss over. He said multiple times that there's real hate out there for President Obama. He kept using the term real hate. Those are very strong words. Hate is a strong word, but when he said real hate in the context of how people are talking about this president, it makes you really wonder, you know, at what level is he referring to? Because he keeps using the term real hate. So I don't know if our listening audience are aware of this, but just recently, another disturbing disrespect to the president was displayed on a billboard sign. Now, I don't know if you've seen the billboard sign, but I would encourage you to go out to TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com after the show to look at the billboard, to see the physical billboard. But here's what the billboard sign was displaying. Now, it was displaying side-by-side images of James Holmes, the suspect shooter who killed 12 people and wounded 58 others by firing weapons inside the packed midnight showing of The Dark Knight Rises. Side by side with that guy, James Holmes, and the president. Here's what the billboard says. Kills 12 in a movie theater with assault rifle. Everyone freaks out. Of Mr. Obama, it says, killing thousands with foreign policy wins Nobel Peace Prize. Now, of course, there were some reactions on both sides of this particular issue in this billboard, but repulsive, disgusting, and bypassing tasteless are just some of the opinions of the billboard left in the comments section of the local news reports. Maurice Clements, a spokesman for the Ralph Smeed Foundation. Again, Maurice Clements, a spokesman for the Ralph Smeed Foundation, the ultra-libertarian group that owns the billboard, boasting the slogan, making statism unpopular, admitted that the Idaho Statesman, that the provocative content is a technique of trying to make a point, and it maybe was poorly done. Still, Clements stood by the billboard's message, which was that Americans are outraged over killing in Colorado, but we're not outraged over the boys killed in Afghanistan. We're not saying that Obama is a lunatic, Clements said. So, Jima, what are they saying if they're not saying
that's exactly attention? That's exactly what they're saying. And they did that, and whatever their intent was, they met their intent. Why? Because we're talking about it. It's been talked about. It's been in all the cable, on all the cable shows. It's been on papers and blogs and everything. And they got exactly what they wanted out of it. I mean, there's no way you can place a suspect, an arrested person who has been charged with, so far, 12 counts of murder, and place his face next to the face of the President of the United States and say you wasn't trying to make any connection. Well, what you put him up there for then? You could have put a dog up there for that matter. You know, I mean, so they were intent on what they were doing, and that goes to what Michael Eric Dyson was saying about
absolutely.
The real haters.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And there are real haters, and we keep wanting to play like these people are not in existence, and they are, and they are in prominent positions, and they have platforms that are huge, that reach millions of people. So we can play like, you know, there are no people out there that could do some of the things that we've read about in emails and jokes about throwing the president and the first lady off the helicopter and, you know, all of the things they've said over the course of his time in office that you have never, ever heard toward another president. You can say what you want to. Bush did all what he did. And I do not recall not one black person standing up on TV, on a radio show, saying some of the hateful things that I've heard people say about the president. I don't care what you say. It didn't happen. And the
I have
only
to agree
reason
with you.
It happened to this president is because he's black. That is the only reason.
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. It's time to take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment. Stay tuned for more of Current Events with Patrick Cook.
You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, Tailor Made Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, Tailor Made's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Need a new website? haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Early on, I said that there were two issues that were the focal point for the president's speech at the National Urban League last week. One, we talked about very extensively, was the education plan, and we kind of extended the conversation by talking about the president's demeanor as he approached the African Americans. The other issue that was of was gun control. Now, we talked about this last week, Jim and I, on Current Events last week, and I just mentioned that obviously somebody from the Obama administration is paying attention to our show and all the things that we're doing. But, Jim, I want to know from you, what do you think that the president's goal was or his objective was by coming out speaking on gun control in the manner that he did?
Well, I mean, he had to because it was fresh. He had just left from down there visiting with the families. He knows it's a topic that Democrats generally run away from. They very seldom come out and say anything about it. There wasn't any real comment. And we've had major tragedies. He talked about Virginia Tech. He talked about what happened with Representative Giffords down in Tucson. And so, and Columbine, for that matter. And so we've never had a real conversation, a real dialogue about gun control because people just turn the switch off and go straight to what their rights are as American citizens. And so the fact that he mentioned it gets an A. The fact that he mentioned Chicago and Philadelphia and New Orleans and other major cities that have people dying, young people, and he made a point to say young people, dying from gun violence every day. The fact that he said that was important. And so for those people that want to chastise him for making the statement earlier about cutting off the TV, then you could find the same person that want to act like, well, why he just got to talk to violence about us? Because it's our community that's having all the shootings, you know? Just last weekend, I think Chicago had 12 more people that were shot over the weekend. I mean, it's every week. I think they're up to 300 people being shot in Chicago. And so he had to say something about it because he had gotten flack for not saying something. For the weekend, he went to Chicago and was at Valerie Jarrett's daughter's wedding. And that weekend, I want to say maybe 14, 15 people got shot. And Roland Martin came out and made a statement that the president should have said something, you know, should have a big speech about violence in our communities. And so he may not respond when we want him to respond. Goes back to the whole Trayvon Martin situation. That press conference was not about Trayvon Martin. That press conference was about him announcing some new person to his cabinet. And the one question that came from the press corps was about Trayvon Martin. So you can say what you want to about this president, but when he's going to make a statement, it is calculated. It is never by happenstance, and he means exactly what he says. So when he made that statement at National Urban League to that audience, that was intentional.
You know, I wonder what the impact that was made upon him when he visited the families. You know, he went and eats and sat down, you know, not on a time scale. He sat down and had a very intimate conversation with each one of the victims' families. And so I wonder how much of an impact that had on him, or did that coerce him a little bit to kind of just come out and say something? Because you're right, most of the Democrats stay away from this topic altogether. They don't even mention it. But he took it upon himself to at least get it out there on a very national scale. What do you think the impact was of visiting these families?
Well, you're already dealing with a president that has compassion for people and has a heart for people. We already know that about him, because every time he goes to an area that's been devastated, you see in his speech right there afterwards how he's been affected by what he just saw. And so that day, last Sunday, I believe, when he was out there in Colorado, they asked him repeatedly, they asked the press people, how much time was he going to be there, and they said he's not really concerned about time. He wanted to spend as much time with those people as they would allow him to. And so that's why his statement kept coming, oh, he's coming soon, and they didn't know what time the president was going to make his speech, because he was taking the time to meet with those families at that hospital, and that's because that's the type of person he is. So I'm pretty sure that he already had something going on the inside, because he's that type of person. And then when he saw them and heard their stories, and then he's able to recount a story that one of the young victims and survivors had mentioned to him, he's able to share that with us, to put it on a more personal level for everybody. So he does that in such a way that you knew at some point he was going to speak about the need for us to have that conversation, and the fact that our gun laws might need to be addressed at some point. And everybody was saying, oh, it's too soon to talk about it. And we say that after every major tragedy, we say it's too soon, and then we never get back to the conversation until the next tragedy.
You know, Fareed Zakaria had a outstanding blog that he did on CNN.com. I would encourage everyone to go out there and read it. And it's entitled "Time to Face Facts on Gun Control." You know, your friend and colleague and very good constituent of yours, Al Sharpton, has always said, "You may have your own opinion, but you can't have your own facts." Mm-hmm. And so this article tends to talk about the facts. And I'm going to read just a part of it, and I want you to respond to some of this, Jima. It reads, "It has now been just over a week since a lone gunman opened fire on moviegoers in Aurora, Colorado. The airways have been dominated by soul searching. Most of the pundits have concluded that the main cause of this calamity is the dark, strange behavior of the gunman. Talking about anything else, they say, is silly. The New York Times, usually extremely wise columnist David Brooks, explained that this is a problem of psychology, not sociology. At one level, this makes sense, of course, as the proximate cause, but really, it's a questionable analysis. Think about this. Are there more lonely people in America compared with other countries? Are there, say, fewer depressed people in Asia and Europe? So why do they all have so much less gun violence than we do? The United States stands out from the rest of the world not because it has more nutcases. I think we can assume that those people are sprinkled throughout every society equally, but because it has more guns." Jim, he goes on to talk about the number of guns per citizens and things of that nature. Does Fareed have a point here?
Whew, that, you know, when you see the data, it's alarming to me. When I was looking over some things online and I saw the number of gun deaths here in the United States as it relates to every other country, and you're like, but we're supposed to be more civilized than everybody else. And how is it that we find ourselves killing people at such an alarming rate? And then it dawned on me, yeah, but we incarcerate more people than any other nation as well. So it's probably part and parcel. They probably go hand in hand. So it's startling to go through those numbers and to hear those that oppose stricter gun laws, their rationale is so not normal. Those are the people that scare me when they hold to that we have to have it. It just doesn't add up to me. So it's startling. I mean, he has a point. I mean, you know, we really need to take a look at why it seemed to be okay.
You know, he said, look at the map below. It shows the average number of firearms per 100 people. Most of the world is shaded light green. Those are the country where there are between 0 and 10 guns per 100 citizens. In dark brown, you have the countries with more than 70 guns per 100 people. The United States is the only country in that category. In fact, the last global small arms survey showed that there are 88 guns for every 100 Americans. You know who's second? Yemen. And so when people think of Yemen, they think of all of the violence. And now when people think of the United States, they think of violence. And in particular, gun violence, because of all of the horrific national issues that we have around gun control. So the president coming out to speak on this issue was a major first step. But, Jima, what do you think is step two and beyond?
Well, first of all, we have to stop allowing ourselves as a nation to be held hostage by the NRA. And that's fun fact number one. I mean, every time there's an issue, we get it. And it's our elected officials who get held up by the NRA. And so then they are slow to move, if anything. As I stated, we say it's always too early to even have a conversation about gun control. So there's no real reason on planet Earth that a human being needs to have a magazine clip that releases the amount of bullets that it can, and you need that in your house for what purpose? There's no reason that a human being needs to have access to an assault rifle and that there is no national database that has the names of people and how many weapons they have. You know, the shooter in Colorado was able to do some of his things online. 6,000 rounds of ammunition, and we don't think that's a problem? What was he going to do with that? It's not that many deer or buffalo or whatever he's trying to kill up in Colorado. There's not enough animals because you can only kill so. How's it you can only kill so many when you go out hunting, but you can just have free reign on the human race?
That's right. Yeah,
I mean,
that's
think
crazy.
About that. You have a set number you can even injure, let alone kill, and yet I'm just supposed to be okay with you being able whenever you depressed and going through some sort of psychosis and some sort of psychotic break, you just walk in the building and unload on everybody, and I'm not supposed to question the amount of bullets you had or why did you have that type of weapon. And so we've got to have that conversation. What is terror? We talked about this last week. What is the true definition of a terrorist? Because I think we've lost that somewhere. And what is the true definition of an assault rifle, an assault weapon, and what are they used for? And when you began to go outside of those defined definitions of what that weapon is used for, then you should be placed on a list. You got a no-fly zone, you got a no-gun zone list. You shouldn't be able to buy another weapon until you turn in 5. Why do you need 20 guns in your house?
That's right.
Where do you live?
You only got 2 hands.
That you need that many weapons.
Right.
I don't understand it. I just don't understand it. And if you say out of every 100 people, so let's say you live in a big old high rise somewhere and it's, you know, 600 people in your square block or whatever, you telling me for every 100 there's 88 guns, right?
Yep.
Is that what you just said?
That's
so
right.
So times that by what, 6? How many guns is that on the street? You the math person. Yeah.
400 and something plus.
Right. 400-some-plus guns in a span of 600 people.
Yeah.
And we don't know if those people are children. I mean, we don't know. But you got 600 people with 400-and-some-odd guns. Do the math about what's going to happen in that neighborhood.
it's going to be a small war, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, if something pops off like that, you're definitely going to have, you know, if everybody, you know, packing. Everybody, and then not to mention, everybody's not trained well to use those guns. I mean, people can talk about having a gun, but not being able to use it properly is another thing. You know, just like the problem with driver's license. Everybody, you know, people that go out and drive don't mean they know how to, you know, have the proper way to use and operate a vehicle. And so, you know, when it comes to guns, there needs to be something outside of just being able, you know, being a right to go buy that gun. And so I just can't. And you said it best. We need to start as a people to really do something about that. We no longer allow the NRA to hold us hostage to this gun law. If we really believe that there's a problem, we need to stand up and talk about it.
For sure. I mean, because as you just stated, you have to get a license to drive a car. You have to get a license to go fishing. You have to get a license to go hunting. But yeah, you don't have to have a license to actually carry a gun. You're supposed to, but nobody's checking that.
Right.
Because there's too many guns being sold out of the back of a trunk.
So, you know, I'm just saying.
I
want to shift the conversation now and to Mitt Romney. You know, I really wonder, is he ready for the international stage? And I want you to hear what Morning Joe had to say about this guy. Take a listen.
America too, but
they're
I'll
wrong.
Tell you, if you can't believe somebody,
mm-hmm.
can't believe that Mitt Romney would go to London and decide to start criticizing how they're running the Olympic Games. I mean, what's he going to do in Israel? Look around and go, you know what?
I'm a tad bit worried about the trip to Israel.
I think the Palestinians probably should have all of Jerusalem. I mean, and then what's he going to do in Poland? Say Hitler was right. No, you don't do this.
What's he going to do, Polish jokes?
What's he doing? Be a Polish joke in Poland.
All right.
Boy,
well,
what a stumble. Yes.
You know, it's interesting that because Morning Joe, I mean, Joe Scarborough, he is really conservative. I mean, even to a fault, because most of the stuff he says is idiotic, if you ask me. And for him to just not be able to find or justify anything that Mitt Romney does just kind of goes to show you that, you know, the conservatives are not in Mitt Romney's court at all. So, Jimmy, what happened? Why did Mitt go out and make such a huge blunder on the pretty much the eve of the Olympics?
Because he's Mitt Romney. That's the answer. It's really not I don't have to do a psychological profile of him, because Mitt Romney feels as though he is above everybody else. He's better than everybody else. He ran an Olympics and he came in on his white horse and saved the Winter Games, which I don't even remember. So that's telling you how important it was in my life. I bet half of the people don't remember the whatever games those was in Salt Lake City. But anyway, but how he came in and saved the Olympics from crumbling and all he did, which now we're finding out may not have all been ethical. Some of the dealings he made with people been a little shady. So because he's ran one, he thinks he knows it. It goes to his I'm a CEO, I'm a businessman, and business people that own stuff just say what they want to say because that's what they do.
You know, when it's interesting, we're starting to see more and more business, as my son would do in air quotes, business people get involved in more social activities. In particular, we see them now infiltrating our educational system. And we see now that this education system is taking a turn for the worse. So I wonder if we're going to relegate allowing business people to take over our government, and in doing so, take the government in the same direction. What do you think?
Well, I think that business person has to have some experience in the area in which they're trying to cross over into. I don't have a problem with a business person doing something in education if you have an educational background or if you've worked on your local school board. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You got to have some understanding of what the process is. But what happened, and I want to say this kind of all kicked in under Bush and maybe even some under Clinton, definitely with the No Child Left Behind, is that we thought business people knew how to run business because they have a successful business model. And so we wanted to bring that model over into our education system and thought it would get the same results. But it can't get the same results because your outcomes are different. When you're running a business, you're looking for a bottom line, profit. That's the only thing you're concerned about, how much money you're going to make. When you're dealing with people and children from all sorts of backgrounds that get all sorts of issues, it can't just be about a test score. It got to be about how am I going to educate this child holistically. When we stopped educating our children holistically is when we began to see an even greater decline in our test scores because we were no longer concerned as to whether or not they was eating at home or not. So we wonder why we have all these behavior problems, kids getting on Prozac and all this other medicine. We diagnosing everybody with ADHD. Well, a lot of times kids are hungry and acting out, but that wasn't what we was concerned about. We was concerned about maintaining their behavior, squashing their behavior long enough for me to put my numbers in October and for them to take whatever their state standardized test was and for me to get the score. That's all we were concerned about. That's business. That's not education.
And here we are facing a similar opportunity or chance or whatever you want to call it with Mitt Romney being the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party taking over the White House with this notion of business. And we know the government is supposed to be of the people, by the people, for the people. But if you go in there with this business mentality and you worry about the bottom line, the people could be in a world for a world of hurt.
Yeah, for sure. And if they're not, if they have such amnesia, which we do, America's, we have amnesia. We forget stuff from yesterday. So we want to forget that it was just 5 years ago, 6 years ago, that Bush was still in office and we were about to fall off of a cliff. Then you go ahead on and you elect Mitt Romney. You go right ahead. And if you think you was catching hell before, you just wait till he get in office. Because he already said he doesn't care about poor people. There's already a safety net that he's trying to gut. So he's already told you, you're going to be on your own because I got mine. I really don't need none of this. So my goal is to, as a businessman, is to make money. How am I going to make money? I'm going to cut everything that's not making money. And you can't do that in government. You can do that in business, but you can't do that in government because you got to give some things a chance to work.
Yeah.
And when you run in a business, you're on a short time frame because you got shareholders. You got investors who want to see a quicker return on their investment.
Mm-hmm.
When you invest in a child, that investment starts in Head Start,
mm-hmm.
in pre-K,
mm-hmm.
that you might not see till they graduate from college.
That's right.
Start their own thing.
Right.
So that's not a quick return on that. And if you don't understand that and you're in a government position or you're trying to have an impact on policy, then you're not the person that's going to get us out and get us to where we're trying to go.
I have to agree with that. Let's take a listen at the rest of the conversation on Morning Joe. And they kind of break down, for those of you that haven't heard what happened with Mitt Romney, they kind of break down the London's response to what he said. So this is not an American's opinion. This is, you know, the people he insulted, here's what they had to say. So take a listen to this.
That was a big stumble. That's our lead story this morning, and obviously it has an Olympic connection, so we'll go to Willie Geist in London for that. Willie.
Mika, I got to show you a couple of papers this morning. The covers are all, of course, about the opening ceremony, but inside the Daily Mail, who invited party pooper Romney?
Oh, no.
That's the headline there.
Then
another
top
of the newspapers, the London Times says, nowhere man Romney loses his way with gaffe about the games. They're taking this awfully personally over here, outraged over the comment Mitt Romney made to Brian Williams in an interview a couple of nights ago. The Daily Mail headline also, Romney's terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day in London.
Well,
from the Guardian's
Lord
website, Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney's Olympics blunder stuns number 10 and hands gift to Obama. The headlines all coming in response to this comment made about London's readiness for the Games.
In the short time you've been here in London, do they look ready to your experienced eye?
You know, it's hard to know just how well it will turn out. There are a few things that were disconcerting. The stories about the private security firm not having enough people, the supposed strike of the immigration and customs officials, that obviously is not something which is encouraging. Because in the Games, there are three parts that make Games successful. Number one, of course, are the athletes. That's what overwhelmingly the Games are about. Number two are the volunteers, and they'll have great volunteers here. But number three are the people of the country. Do they come together and celebrate the Olympic moment? And that's something which we only find out once the Games actually begin.
So quite naturally, you know, after making a bold statement like that, you know, you're going to get a reaction from the local people over there. And I'm sure he got out of there as quickly as he could. And now he's in Israel trying to do the same thing. What's happening in Israel, Jima?
The press corps. He cut the press corps out of the fundraiser from last night. So we don't know what's happening in Israel because he wouldn't let the press come in there. Although he agreed in the beginning that they would be allowed, which is why so many of them were there, the 9,000-mile trip to get over there, and then he gets there and changes his mind. So if for no other reason, you know, take a look at a person who always wants to talk about someone's character. But what does it say about his character to promise you something, and then when it's time for it to happen, oh, you can't come now? That says a lot to me about what type of person he is that he's not a man of his word, and that, you know, he'll change his mind depending on how he feels. So you can't really depend on him. You can't trust him. So we don't know what's going on in Israel because he cut the press out.
So you think he's going to get any backlash from this, you know, seeing that he obviously, you know, don't want to have a Sarah Palin moment?
Oh, I'm sure he's going to get some backlash. I mean, the press yesterday was unrelenting on how they felt about it. So I'm sure the shows today probably talked about it, and I'm sure they'll be talking about it in the morning as he goes from there to his next stop. But so far, this has been an epic fail. He gets a big, gigantic F, in my opinion. He couldn't hold the president's toenail clipper from what the president did in 2008 when he was running for president, and he went over to, was it Berlin, wherever he went,
doing the campaign. Yeah, he kind of set the bar kind of high. And so Mitt Romney always trying to do what President Obama does, everything.
Right.
Singing.
So,
yeah.
Right. So you look at that response and that welcoming that he received over there to what Mitt Romney has received on his quote-unquote foreign trip. And as I stated, he couldn't even hold the president's toenail clipper. Two different leagues. He wants. So you want to be Mr. Elitist, you go right ahead. You got that one.
All right, it's time for another break. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's T-A-I LORMADE101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my
stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Patrick Cook.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Barbara Klein. The head of Syria's opposition umbrella group is urging the UN to hold an emergency session as Syrian government forces continue a massive offensive in Aleppo, the country's largest city and commercial hub. The BBC's Ian Pannell is in Aleppo and reports government forces are using heavy weapons to wrest control of several neighborhoods from rebel fighters.
We're getting reports of heavy clashes, particularly in the Salahuddin area, which is in the west of the city. This was the area that was targeted yesterday with a column of tanks and military vehicles. The rebel Free Syrian Army claimed that they managed to repel that, and they damaged a number of vehicles and killed a number of soldiers. It's impossible to verify that. Similar situation seems to be occurring in another western part, Saif al-Dawla.
The BBC's Ian Pannell in Aleppo. The New York Police Department is preparing to unveil new surveillance technology that it developed with Microsoft. The NYPD offered a guarded preview this weekend in Aspen, Colorado, and NPR's Dina Temple-Raston was there.
New York Police Commissioner Ray Kelly told an audience of officials at the Aspen Security Forum that he'll unveil a new domain awareness system with New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg very soon. He provided only sketchy details about the new software and hardware program. He said it would combine historical video surveillance and law enforcement databases to track criminals and potential terrorists, delivering it all in a seamless package. The commissioner said the department could end up selling the technology to other police departments in the U.S. and around the world. Kelly's announcement about the new system comes at a time when the NYPD has been under fire for its surveillance of Muslim communities. Kelly defended the police department's programs, saying they were both effective and constitutional. Dina Temple-Raston, NPR News, Aspen, Colorado.
On this second full day of play at the London Olympics, the U.S. has won two more gold medals. NPR's Mike Pesca brings us up to date on some of today's action, beginning with a big moment in the pool.
Dana Vollmer bested the field and every other woman who's ever swum the 100-meter butterfly with a world record-setting performance. Earlier in the day, skeet shooter Kim Rohde won gold, her fifth straight Olympics with a medal, also a record. In beach volleyball, American men Phil Dalhauser and Todd Rogers begin their gold medal defense, and in men's basketball, Argentina plays Lithuania. Along with the Spanish side, those two teams represent the USA's toughest competition. The U.S. women's field hockey team also faces off today. The U.S. has a single medal in field hockey, a bronze, back in 1984. Mike Pesca, NPR News, London.
Host country Great Britain won its first medal of the Games thanks to cyclist Lizzie Armistead, who won the silver in the women's road race. This is NPR News. In Tokyo today, thousands of people formed a human chain and encircled Japan's parliament in demanding the government abandon nuclear power. It's the latest in a series of large, peaceful demonstrations since the government restarted two reactors in central Japan earlier this month. The nuclear disaster at Fukushima, triggered by last year's earthquake and tsunami, continues to raise concerns about safety and allegations of collusion between nuclear plant operators and regulators. A hacker is peddling new technology that threatens to blow a gaping hole in the security of computer networks. NPR's Jim Hawk reports it was revealed at DEF CON, one of the world's largest annual computer hacker conventions.
A hacking expert is selling a $200 password cracking tool that makes it easy to decipher internet traffic sent through a widely used method for securing business communications. Moxie Marlinspike said he developed the service, cloudcracker.com, by taking advantage of a vulnerability he discovered in a widely used virtual private network technology. The software tool can crack passwords on a large number of networks, including those with Windows XP-based computers. The encryption expert says he's publicizing his work in an effort to warn the public about security risks and pressure manufacturers to address the problems. Jim Hawk, NPR News.
An unmanned Russian spacecraft successfully linked up with the International Space Station today using a new docking system after a failed 5 days ago. The new docking gear will be used to deliver astronauts and cargo to the orbiting outpost. On this test mission, the supply ship will be loaded up with garbage from the space station. I'm Barbara Klein, NPR News in Washington.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We now shift to a very controversial topic, and this is about Chick-fil-A. Now, I'm going to read an article that was written in the Dessert News by Carmen Herbert. Now, here's what she writes. When I go through the drive-thru at fast food restaurants, the last thing on my mind is, I wonder what this chain's stance is on gay marriage. Nope. All I want to know is whether they remember ketchup with my fries. So when I heard about Chick-fil-A, President Dan Cathy, coming out against gay marriage, I was a little surprised. When asked about his previous statement about supporting traditional family values, Dan Cathy said that while not popular, they intend to stay the course. We are very much supportive of the family, the biblical definition of the family unit, he told the Baptist Press. We know that it might not be popular with everyone, but thank the Lord, we live in a country where we can share our values and operate on biblical principles. His comments have caused quite a stir, even moving the Jim Henson Company to consider pulling its toys from upcoming kids' meal. The Jim Henson Company has celebrated and embraced diversity and inclusiveness for over 50 years, and we have notified Chick-fil-A that we do not wish to partner with them on any future endeavors. Now, Jim, I ask you, and I pose this question more broadly, is it time to kind of stop patronizing and stop visiting Chick-fil-A because of this incident?
No, I mean, Chick-fil-A, it just happened to be one that we know about. What about all the ones that we don't know about? What about, you know, I read somewhere that Walmart and its political donations donated more than 50% to Republican or conservative type organizations. So if we're going to do Chick-fil-A, then we got to do everybody. And I don't know if we, the American people, have it in us to do that. So does it mean, I mean, Chick-fil-A does have the best chicken as you look for a fast food chicken sandwich and the waffle fries, and they have a mean lemonade and sweet tea. So are you willing to give that up for a principle that may not have any impact on your life? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But what I do know is that once he made the statement public, then people now have a choice to make as to whether or not they want to continue to patronize that company. But Chick-fil-A is just one of millions of companies who, I mean, you would talk about Procter & Gamble and Kleenex and all those that's owned by the Koch brothers, you know, who stopped buying toilet paper.
That's true. You know,
I mean, you know,
Do you consider this one of those too big to fail moments? Businesses can pretty much come out and do whatever they want to because they're supplying a need or, you know, a real big want, and they can pretty much say and do what they want to?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think we just don't know how to respond because we're still so divided on the whole gay rights issue. We're not a nation that is in agreement on what that means yet. And so because we're not completely in agreement on what that means yet, we don't know how to respond when a company does something like this. So, you know, it's one thing to discriminate against black people. That we can stand up and make a plan about. But this, because it hits at the core of what we claim to be our Christian values and our Christian beliefs, because it hits at that core or it questions that, then we don't quite know how to respond to it.
So you believe that because of our core Christian beliefs, this is what solicits such a strong response when gay rights issues are mentioned?
Yes, because everybody just goes back to the Bible. I mean, even in his statement, he says that I believe he made mention of he follows the teachings of the Bible of a marriage being between a man and a woman. And that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But does that mean that you are in favor of practices or policies that will hinder and or discriminate against people who believe differently than you? What makes America great is that we don't all have to agree and don't all have to believe the same thing. The problem is that when we run across somebody that does not believe what we believe, then we think there's something wrong with them. And that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, so what if the situation was reversed? You know, we're talking about everybody that's taking a stance against people for believing that gay marriage is okay, but what about the people that they're discriminating against by saying that I am going to push you aside because of your beliefs? I mean, isn't it true that both beliefs are equally important?
Right. The problem is that when you begin to put it in a category and you just talk about it from a religious standpoint, then I want to hear, and I've said this before, I want to hear the same fire, the same intensity when we're talking about every other sin that we commit on a daily basis. As a nation, we throw away so much food, and yet we have the highest poverty rate, period, ever. 1 in 4 children go to bed hungry every night. So you mean to tell me that the scripture that you can remember about one man and one woman, but you can't remember the scripture that says to feed my sheep? You can't remember the scripture that says to take care of the least of these? So you can't have it both ways. So when we stop trying to parcel out the word and try to parcel out the scripture to meet our own individual needs, then we can have a real conversation about it. Until then, if people who believe differently than I believe are not having a direct impact on my day-to-day life, then I submit they can do what they want to do. And when their time is up, they to whoever it is they call their God, because everybody don't believe in who I believe in. So whoever that is that they believe in, they have to answer to him or her or it or whatever it is they worship it.
So you know, first of all, let me say may his soul rest in peace, Donald A. Perry, the vice president of corporate public relations for Chick-fil-A. But he died of a heart attack on Friday. And so how much of an impact do you think this controversy, and because he's a part of public relations, how much of an impact do you think this debate or this discussion had on his life or his passing?
Well, you know, I'm a firm believer that everything happens for a reason. And so the fact that, and maybe just in symbolic reasons alone, the fact that the person that was in charge of your public relations has died during the midst of one of your probably biggest public relations scandals. And it could be because maybe he didn't believe what that person believed. And he would have had to come out and say some things that may have been against what he believed himself. So instead of the Lord putting him through that, I'm going to say the Lord. I don't know who he worshiped. You know, he just went on ahead and took him out the way. I don't know. But we're still having the conversation about whether or not companies should be able to say what they need to say. Now, according to Mitt Romney, corporations are people. So if corporations are people, then the people, then the corporations have the same right to the freedom of speech. I don't buy that, but that's what Mitt Romney's statement in terms of corporations being people. Can I, as an employee of TaylorMade Training and Consulting, have my own thoughts and feelings? Yes, I can. But when I stand before people, I'm not just representing me. I'm also representing TaylorMade Training and Consulting. So whatever I say is a direct reflection on TaylorMade Training and Consulting. So if I don't want to put TaylorMade Training and Consulting in a bad light, then I have to limit, tailor, tone down, make a disclaimer statement prior to me saying something that these are the views of mine, not necessarily those of TaylorMade. That doesn't mean TaylorMade Training and Consulting won't get some backlash, but who? What does that mean? He's just one person out of the entire company. And we don't know if that's how the whole company feels, the real, if that's how the owner feels. I mean, and even if they do, what has he done that has hindered? Do they have policies at Chick-fil-A that discriminates or has some hint of improprieties or some unethical things happening there that relates to their employees that may be gay or lesbian? I mean, until we get to that, then everything else is just something to be talking about.
But, you know, he didn't seem to kind of come out and do what you suggested by trying to separate his views from the position of the organization. He left them kind of joined together at the hip by continuing to come out in this with his CEO hat on and says, you know, this is what I stand by, and in the context of Chick-fil-A. So he had an opportunity, several opportunities, in fact, to kind of separate himself from Chick-fil-A and his personal views. I don't think he did a really good job of it if he tried.
Right, and he may not have tried, because sometimes people, when they believe so strongly in something, they really don't care who's offended by it. They really don't care if they said it right. They really don't care what the fallout is going to be, because they stand firm by what they believe in. And that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. I just need to know, what are the policies that Chick-fil-A has that will reflect his beliefs? And if there aren't any policies that is showing any sort of discriminatory practices or whatever, then he can believe, and Chick-fil-A can believe what they want to believe. But you better hire me if I happen to be gay or lesbian. You better promote me, because if you don't, then that's the first thing I'm going to say is you didn't, because you know that I'm gay or that I'm lesbian. So they've opened themselves up to some other backlash. You know, the question should be now, do those people that work at Chick-fil-A, have they ever felt any sort of whatever from management? That's where you determine whether or not it has creeped over into that area that really shouldn't be that gray, but it is as it relates to discriminatory practices.
So if I'm working, or if you're working at Chick-fil-A today and you heard this, how would you respond to this? Would you stop working there? Would you come out and say to your manager, or would you, I mean, how would you respond to this?
I would begin to take full inventory over my time of my career there at Chick-fil-A, taking a look at, you know, what I've seen happen to people, what I've seen happen to me. If I've seen something now, all of a sudden it seems a little fishy, that Antoine don't work here no more when he was the best worker, or Antoine didn't get that position and I thought he should have. I mean, you know, now I'm wondering if they didn't give it to Antoine because they knew Antoine was gay, now that I know how you feel about gay. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So now
right.
I'm going to start looking for issues that I may not have looked for before because it didn't register. But now that you put it in the forefront, now, you know, I have to take a look at it. I have
right.
to.
You know, I want to kind of extend this on a little bit further, and I want to talk a little bit about AIDS in the community with respect to gay and lesbian, well, in particular gay, and how it's affecting the community. and the improvements in AIDS over the last several years. There was an article written by George E. Curry, published Friday around noon or so, and it reads thus. There was a refrain that was heard in almost every speech this week at the International AIDS Conference in Washington. We are on the verge of ending the HIV/AIDS epidemic. That wasn't a statement that could be made 30 years ago when the pandemic was first identified. It wasn't a statement that would be uttered at the last International AIDS Conference I attended 2 years ago in Vienna. But in the nation capital this week, that was all the buzz. At the opening session Sunday night, Michael Sadaib, executive director of UNAIDS, said, "Now, I want you to close your eyes, listen to my words. We can end AIDS, wear a condom, end AIDS, give money, end AIDS." Monday morning opening plenary provided more of the same. The first speaker was Dr. Anthony S. Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the National Institute of Health. "We are scientifically solid ground. We are on scientifically solid ground when we say we can end HIV/AIDS pandemic." He told the audience of scientists, researchers, and policymakers from around the world. He added this caveat: "The end of AIDS will not be accomplished, however, without a major global commitment to make it happen. We have a historic opportunity with science on our side to make the achievement of an AIDS-free generation a reality." Zima, how significant would this be if they can potentially, I mean, really, you know, end AIDS?
Oh, it would be huge. It would be major because it's been such a stigma placed on people their entire lives for it. And if there is a way, I mean, we know one way is to have protected sex. We do know there's a way to prevent it, is if people were to have protected sex. But let's say you have it, and for the percentage that really don't know they have it, and when they find out, then they can begin to take precautionary measures. But let's say in the time you find out, you've had unprotected sex already, and with someone that you care about. I mean, you think about Magic and Cookie. You know, when he found out about it, him and Cookie, she was pregnant, but he didn't know he had AIDS at the time or was HIV positive at the time. So we have to definitely do a much better job of protecting ourselves on the front end, getting the mandatory testing that one should have every year or every 10 years or whatever, depending on your relationship status. And so if we follow those things, then, you know, the getting rid of it seems a lot more attainable. But the problem is that we don't follow those things. And that's the sad part, because AIDS is probably one of the diseases that truly is preventable. Once you just wear a condom or use protection, or once you find out, don't have unprotected sex no more, go get some medicine. I mean, and things have changed in 20 years in terms of how much the medicines are costing, and it's no longer the death sentence it was 20 years ago or even 30 years ago at this point, where people got it and boy, they was gone. You know, people now live with it and live through it for years. So I hope it happens. I hope it happens. But I hope we do our part.
You know, I wonder, though, if this becomes another capitalism moment. And what I mean by that is that you're going to have an enormous amount of people. For example, Africa has a large number of population that cannot afford it or cannot even get anything to subsidize their income, so they can't afford it. But if you have this cure, if you will, and, you know, will the mission be to actually try to cure AIDS altogether by supplying as much as they can to people that need it? Or would it be just a money-making machine, meaning that if you need this, I got it, you know, and you got to do whatever you can to take it to afford it, even if that means sells your babies? You know, what kind of era would this put us in if they do, in fact, find the cure?
Well, I hope that it doesn't become too capitalistic, because I think it more people would die unnecessarily if hard for them to get the medicines that they need. And we've done that already. And because this is a global issue that has reached on every continent, then hopefully there'll be some sort of global policing of, you know, how medicines are distributed and where and who gets it first and how it is paid for, because we know in some of your less affluent nations it's going to be difficult for them. So how do we, those of us in America, how does America help those that are less fortunate? And I do know that Bush did a lot in terms of AIDS research and things of that nature. So we have to continue, and I just hope that it does not become another referendum on who can make the best drug at the highest price to the highest bidder.
I have to agree with you. Well, it's time for our praise break. Upcoming next is Dietrich Haddon, Touch Me. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Give me an old school beat. This is what we gon' do with it. Didn't
Well, man, I like your dancing.
Dietrich Haddon, Touch Me. That was a great song for our praise break today. Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're approaching our last segment, final segment for today, and I want to kind of take a pause for a minute, and I want to pay respect to Sherman Hensley. That's right, George Jefferson passed away last week, and I wanted to kind of to take a moment and just pay my respects to him. And Jimmy, I want to give you an opportunity to weigh in. What significance did George Jefferson have on our society?
George Jefferson, I believe, was Sherman Hensley, and his role is George Jefferson. Someone said he was the boldest black man on television, because George Jefferson knew who he was, and he really didn't care whether you liked him or not. He was confident. He stood up to bigotry when he was on All in the Family, and when he got his own show, he knew what it was. He was a working man. He was a businessman. He was an entrepreneur. He had his own thing working. And so when was the last time we saw a George Jefferson on primetime television?
Yeah, it's been, yeah, I know.
Right.
Yeah.
Crickets.
So
when you look at that from just that perspective, here was a strong black man married to a black woman with a black child, a black male child at that, you know, and then they had a housekeeper. Who knew that? You know, what? You know, we forget George Jefferson and go straight to Bill Cosby. But before Bill, there was George and what he represented during that time period. You're talking about 60s and 70s here, early 70s here, that this was what was happening. And so, you know, George was groundbreaking. He was groundbreaking. And over the course of his career on television, he was always a person who didn't take nothing, even on the Christian show Amen, where he was a deacon in the church. You know, he was the deacon that had reasoning when it came to how to deal with some of the crazy stuff folks do at church. So he was and will be missed because of he had conviction, and he was funny. He was funny. Above all else, he was funny.
You know, speaking of deceased actors and deceased entertainers, I should say, Michael Jackson has gone, has left us, and it has left his family in a debacle over the kids. Now, so what's going on with the Jackson family these days, Jima?
They need to go sit on somebody's couch, every last one of them individually, and talk about what's going on with them. And then together, they need to come together and figure out how they're going to be better at being who they are and who they have been called to be. Now I hear that Janet and so many of them have been barred from Miss Catherine's house. Janet and Jermaine and Randy, I think, have been barred from Miss Catherine's house, which is crazy in itself because so many of them live there. So now they can't go see their other nieces and nephews that happen to live there at the house. It's just crazy. I hope it's not about the money because Janet has her own money. Now, the other siblings, I'm not real sure about their money situation, but I know Janet got her own money, and I think Rebe's husband was okay, and LaToya got her own money. So it's them brothers that we should be concerned about and they issues and not paying child support and Randy and Jermaine having the same baby mama. Who does that? And neither one of them has paid her child support in a minute, so she's mad at both of them. And so, I mean, it's just a mess. And it's a mess that Miss Catherine is 80-something years old and having to deal with this nonsense. It's a mess that Michael Jackson's children have taken their status as Michael Jackson's children and thinking they can probably be a little bit more than what they should be at this age. I don't think Paris needs a Twitter account no more than then Prince Michael needs a Twitter account. That's just me, though. I'm an old school parent. So I just hope that it's not about the money and that whatever it is, they figure it out. Because I tell you what, if Miss Catherine leaves up out of here and they haven't figured this out, ain't none of them going to make it. One by one, they're going to be jumping off a bridge somewhere.
So I wonder how much that this is a byproduct of losing Michael Jackson. Have they had a real moment to grieve? Is this just a frustration, not dealing with his death? I mean, what do you think is going on here?
No, I don't think it's that. I think it's a combination of things. I think it's the fact that they think they know their brother and they knew their brother better than these executives of this will. And they're feeling as though that somebody is taking advantage of their mother, just like they took advantage of Michael in his life. And they don't want that to happen. This is the world according to Jima. They feel as though they didn't do enough when Michael was alive to protect him and to take care of him, and that they be damned if they're not going to do enough to take care of their mother and the children. And so that's what they're doing. Now, that's just me. I see the glass half full all the time. And so I'm thinking that they know there are some vultures out there. They know that there were some people that did some things that was low down and dirty, i.e. Dr. Murray, you know, and didn't always have Michael's best interest at heart. They want to protect Miss Catherine from that as well as the children. That's just what I think.
What do you think the chances of them being able to do that now that, you know, she's obviously been able to, you know, get up and go when as she please and come back as she please? And also, as a follow-up question to that is, what do you think the significance of her releasing custody of the children?
Well, she didn't do it on intentionally. You know, that happened when she was allegedly not around, and Tito Jackson Jr., went to the court and said he talked to his grandmother. She didn't sound like herself. She was using all kind of phrases. And so the judge declared it to be custody. Well, this week he made it a joint custody between the two. I'm not sure why that is, because it doesn't make sense to me that he would now go with joint custody with Tito Jr. That seems a little off and a little odd, but somewhere in the midst of that is the truth. For her, I know she wants it all. I would think she would want it all to be over as quickly as possible for them not to be in the limelight. I mean, they've been kind of mellow for a while, which means maybe now the numbness has rubbed off that Michael is no longer with us, and maybe now they can see clearly and not through the, you know, eyes of tears. They can actually see clear now. And maybe now they're like, you know what, let me go back to this will. And that will, that can't be right, because it doesn't make, it's the same will. So why? So you would say, well, why now are they talking about the date? Well, it might now just be registering with them that the date that's dated on that will can't be legitimate because he wasn't here. So, I mean, they could just now be finally finding their way out of their mourning, out of their grieving, to be able to ask some tough questions.
So what do you think the next few months going into Christmas is going to look like now that they, you know, come out of the numbness and now starting to, as you can see, all of the cobwebs shaking it off? What do you think the next few months look like?
Well, what needs to happen is that they need to have a family attorney that's doing the speaking for them, because Randy doesn't need to say nothing, and let's pray Jermaine doesn't start talking, and neither does anybody else. As I stated last week, you see a split within the family. You have Randy, Janet, and Jermaine on one side, and Tito and Marlon and Jackie, I guess, on the other, and Rebe and Latoya just kind of out doing their own thing. Rebe with Mama, and Latoya, who knows where she is, but she did finally make a statement this week. So what they need is to have a family attorney speaking on their behalf. If they're concerned about the will, then go through the proper process legally of trying to get the will either looked at to determine whether or not that is a legitimate concern as to whether or not the signature on there, it can be authenticated. So, you know, it's real simple. It doesn't even need to happen in the media. We didn't need to know nothing about it, but here we sit. A week later, still talking about the Jacksons and their drama.
Yeah, and they still keep going through stuff every week. Every day somebody come out and say something crazy. And so, right. I think the saga continues, as they say.
Right.
So I want to shift to a more positive note, and I want to talk a little bit about Oprah's life class coming up. What's going on? Are you excited about it starting next week?
It starts tonight.
Yeah.
It starts tonight at 9 o'clock Central on the Oprah Winfrey Network. And she's back with relationship expert Iyanla VanZant, and they will be talking about guilt. If you go to the website, Oprah.com, and click on the icon that says Life Class, there are some questions there you can answer to kind of get you prepared. Talking about guilt, is there anything that you feel guilty about? Do people make you feel guilty? Do you feel guilty when you have to say no, or when you say yes and you really want to say no? I mean, it really, was a good way to kind of get you ready for class. And so I went online yesterday and I answered a couple of the questions, and is your guilt legitimate? Are you feeling guilty for a reason? Did you do something to cause you to feel guilty? And answering those types of questions. And so I'm really excited about life class starting back up, as you can tell. I will be pulling out my journal and just getting as much, taking in as much as I possibly can, because you can use nuggets along the way. And I have. There's so many things, and they talked about forgiveness that I've been able to use in talking with people, and even encouraging people to go back online to Oprah.com and click on the archives of some of the life classes from last season to kind of, catch up with what's going on. Or even if you're in a spot and you just need to do some healing, they really took you through some steps. And so I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I'm thinking about attending the one about the guilt tonight because, a lot of times when you are in business and, have a full-time job and you participate in the community service and within the community, people always ask you to do things, right? They come to you because they know you're the go-to guy. And in a lot of cases, it's hard to say no to these people because, A, they're either your family or they're people that you visit frequently. And then, they kind of push you in a bind in a lot of cases. And when it comes to, you have so many hours of the day, but yet everybody is so demanding and doesn't take that into account. So it might be something I want to take a look at today because, sometimes it does make you feel guilty when you don't want to, if you don't have the time to help people, but they still continue to ask you to do it and you don't want to say no.
That's very true. And you find yourself, you end up getting some sort of illness behind it, probably because you're carrying it around internally and you're not able to release it. And so a lot of times what we deal with on an emotional level manifests itself into our physical body, and we end up with ulcers and headaches and migraines and leg problems and hip problems. And a lot of times it has to do with what's going on with us emotionally that we haven't dealt with, we haven't allowed it to come out of us in a healthy way. And so I think when you start talking about the need for relinquishing it, letting the guilt go, just like you let go when Bishop Jakes was on there, he talked about his book was Let It Go, and that's the forgiveness, the relationship that didn't work and all the scars that you keep holding on to. At some point, you've got to let them go because there's no room on your train for somebody else because you keep the same bags around with you from the previous relationship. And so because of that, there's no room for nobody to sit down next to you to get to know you because you're carrying all this other stuff around with you. And so the moment you begin to release some stuff, you open up yourself to newer possibilities. Even if it's not about a relationship, it's just the potential for a relationship. It's the potential for freedom. It's the potential for happiness and joy. But you can't have that holding on to all the other things.
That is so true. All right, so in sports, the Olympics is, of course, big news. And it's interesting that in a lot of cases, you really can't see the Olympic Games live on TV. It's kind of a delayed response. But you can watch the Olympics live on the internet. And so all you have to do is go to NBCOlympics.com, November Bravo Charlie Olympics, all one word, NBCOlympics.com. And if you subscribe to one of the the cable services out there, cable or satellite services out there, you can just log in with your account and watch it live. And so, of course, Twitter has been talking about this. And, Jimmy, what's been the Twitter scuttlebutt over the last couple of days about the Olympics being online and not live on TV?
Well, they have totally trashed NBC as, like, the worst host of the Olympics ever. I mean, you would think NBC wasn't doing anything right. And so, which they claim they're going to do better. I mean, the Olympics usually last for about 2 weeks, so maybe by this time next week or midweek we should be getting some things a little bit closer to when it's actually happening, because you can watch something now that happened yesterday that you already know what happened because you've watched it online. I mean, it's kind of weird like that, and even with the age of the Internet, the sports writers and Huffington Post and all of those people are not going to wait for you to watch it on television. They're going to tell you who won the gold.
Absolutely, because it's news, right?
Because it's news, and they want to be the first to report. So it's almost like, okay, NBC, if I really don't have to watch all 12,000 qualifying rounds if I just want to know who won. So they're going to have to get with it, and I think they probably will. There was a lot of talk on Friday night about the opening Olympics, the opening ceremony. A lot of people couldn't understand what London was doing with the whole history. There was a lot of props given to the Queen for coming down in a parachute or a helicopter, however she came down. That was a lot. Everybody was, pretty impressed with the Queen for doing that. So there's been some, difference of opinions in terms of, London didn't do what Beijing did 4 years ago, and that Beijing has set the bar pretty high. And the whole Mary, people wouldn't understand the whole Mary Poppins theme. But I think they gave a lot of history of the country that I think we don't always pay attention to. And so, and that's what they wanted to do with their opening Olympics. But, yeah, coverage has been shoddy. And then they're showing the stuff that most Americans are not that into.
Yeah.
Not saying it's not a good sport. However, most Americans, this is just my survey according to my little Pew poll I've conducted, most Americans are interested in basketball, both men and women, swimming, tennis, gymnastics.
And track.
Track and field, of course. And you can throw some boxing in there, But the badminton, table tennis, the cycling.
Fencing.
Not necessarily. Oh, and volleyball. You got to throw volleyball in there. Volleyball in there.
Right.
We can do some volleyball. And soccer, we're trying to get there on soccer.
Right. We're getting there, yeah.
It's kind of one of them. Who playing type situations. So,
right.
But when I turn and you're showing me fencing, I'm not happy that you're showing me fencing.
Right.
No disrespect to my colleague, Mr. Charles Blow, whose daughter is a junior person in fencing. However, I'm just not that into fencing. So when I got to watch fencing and tabletop badminton and it's tabletop tennis, and then there's a badminton one as well. That I didn't even know that was in there. Then I'm a little bit concerned about the coverage.
They had the women's skeet final shooting competition show, and how ironic was it that the United States won the shooting competition, the women's shooting competition, by hitting 99 out of 100 targets?
Go figure.
Yeah, go figure, right. I have to agree with you. So let's talk about the number of the medals won so far. So right now, the London 2012 Olympic Games is reporting that they are now China is leading in the total medal count. They're leading in the number of gold medals and the total medals. Right now, China has 6 gold, 4 silver, and 2 bronze. The United States is a close second by having 11 total medals, but only 3 gold, 5 silver, and 3 bronze medals, followed by Italy with 7 total medals, Korea with 5, France with 4, and rounding up the top 10 is Korea, Kazakhstan, Australia, Brazil, and Hungary. And so right now China is leading, all nations right now in the total medal count and the total gold count. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I suspect that those numbers will go back and forth between China and America throughout this whole process. I suspect that that's what's going to happen. And looking at some of the athletes that they had put up from China, I suspect that those two will go back and forth. But you have to remember, we haven't, you know, really started the stronger, in my opinion, the stronger sporting events for America just yet.
You know, I was a little shocked. I watched some of the swimming live, watching it online, and Michael Phelps did not place in the, I think it was the 400-meter swimming competition. And that was surprising
right.
to me. He didn't even place. And I even watched it and watched how I think his name Locked won the gold medal. And it was just interesting to me on how he just pulled away on like the third or fourth lap, and he just couldn't catch him. So, but it was interesting because I actually met Michael Phelps before, got a signed poster from him, and I was expecting him to do well, but he did not place.
Right, and of course they're saying he's. You know, the jokesters on Twitter is saying he's been smoking too much.
I knew that was coming up, yeah.
And so that slowed him down. And I just saw a tweet from Tracy Morgan talking about he had to take him out so he can go drinking, so he had to talk him off the ledge last night. So I guess, you know, Michael Phelps is hearing it and hopefully get his head back in the game, in the water, whatever it is he needs to do, and go on ahead and you know, he only needs two more medals to break the record or something. So I'm sure he'll medal at some point. I'm sure.
All right. Any final comments for this week?
I thought it was great to see. If you haven't seen it, check out the video online where after their USA basketball team, men's basketball team, won their game today, that they all lined up to go hug First Lady Michelle Obama. I thought that was awesome. And when I say the entire team led by LeBron went over to where Michelle was sitting and at that point standing, and they all came through the line and hugged her. Not one player or coach, for that matter, did not stop and greet her. So I just thought that was awesome. That was a warm, fuzzy feeling for me at that moment. Final thoughts. We are, I believe, less than or close to 100 days away from the election. As we've been stating all year, please make sure you are registered to vote, that you have all the proper documentation, that you may not have ever needed a photo ID, but in a lot of states you will. Please, please, please pay attention to what's happening in your local states about the voter ID. It is critical. If it wasn't that important, they would not be trying to take it away from you. And now you've had several some of the Republican parties making statements about what they did in Florida was to cut the black vote. What they did in Pennsylvania was to cut the black vote. So if our vote wasn't important, they definitely wouldn't be trying to disenfranchise us. It has been hot in the state of Texas, as it has been all across the country. So just be thankful and grateful for what you have, and pray for those who have to live out in these elements. And for those who do not have air, pray for the elderly. If you know someone elderly, go by and check on them to make sure things are going the way they should be going. Pay attention. It's about to be school time in a couple of weeks here. Getting your kids back to bed at a decent hour and starting them on some sort of routine so that when school starts, then you know that they'll be ready and you won't have to fight them that first 2 weeks of school to get their mind back ready. So those are my final thoughts.
All righty then. I appreciate your final thoughts for the week. We're going to take a break next week, and we're going to pick it back up in about a couple of weeks. I'm going to get ready for I didn't tell a lot of people this, but I'm preparing to write a book, so I'm going to take a break next week, and I am going to continue writing the book. The name of the book is Beyond Hello World. Is a web services is a developer guide to web services security. So during the top of the hour, you heard what's going on with computer security around the world. They just had the July the actual hackers conference in Las Vegas last week, and some details came out of that I need to do some research on. So I'm going to be taking a break next week, and I'm probably going to be replaying one of our shows, our past shows from several weeks ago. But I wanted to kind of just reach out to everyone and let them know that we're going to be taking a week off next week. In the meantime and in between time, we appreciate you listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, and continue to support the show. We appreciate it. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks to all the listeners for tuning in. And, of course, a special thanks to my co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent, Jima Hill Cook. Now, don't forget to follow her on Twitter, and that's at AskJima. That's AskJema. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade Talk Radio, all one word, .blogspot.com. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer. Take us away, Joyce.
Serious music we are dealing with here.
A long time coming, but I know.